Radio Free Palmer presents a special feature presentation with community reporter Emily Forstner, who takes a look at criminal activity in the Valley with her first report, Emily Does Crime.
Crime was never an issue for me. I didn't grow up with a key to our house, and we didn't even have a key to this home for many years until we finished a remodel project. It just never crossed my mind. And so it was another morning just like all the others. I got up, made my coffee, got ready for work, opened the door, walked over to my detached garage, opened the door, walked in, opened my car door to discover that somebody had been in my car. Nothing was gone from the garage. Not the bikes, not the mower, not the other car with a key in it. Just everything had been gone through. Somebody was in there looking for something. It just absolutely creeped me out. I went around to the neighbors and told them what had happened. They all assured me they had guns by their doors and they would have shot somebody. And I didn't know what I was more afraid of, knowing that I had a small militia surrounding me, or the fact that some creeper had been in my car. I thought maybe I should buy one of those online home security surveillance programs. Maybe organize a neighborhood watch. I definitely was going to start locking my doors. And then I decided, why not dig a little bit? Exactly what was going on in my valley?
Even though I live in the greater Palmer area, I started my quest with the Palmer Police Department. Probably because Chief Ketterling makes it so easy. On the website, there is an Ask the Chief link, and he got back to me within the day. Lance Ketterling has been a police officer for 20 years, and the chief is a big guy with big tattoos and a big handshake. I shared with him my story of the unlocked garage and the unlocked car and my freakout when I discovered someone had been in both while I was sleeping. I asked him, just how bad was crime in the valley? What was really happening?
What is it? What's really happening?
Well, okay, let's start with one of your first questions. What's going on in the valley? The answer is, it's not really a lot that's new going on in the valley. Like we talked about earlier, I've been doing this for 20 years. And over those two decades, I can recall numerous instances where we have had young people go from car to car to car down a particular street, either looking for open vehicles and stealing things out of them, or in some cases just spray painting, or in some cases vandalizing, just breaking taillights, shooting windows with BB guns, that kind of thing. So this is not a new phenomenon. What I would say is the rate of incident is increasing, probably.
So crime was getting worse, but not for just one reason.
But we have seen an increase in population over the valley in the last couple of decades, and it's been substantial. You know, we're over 100,000 now. We're probably the second largest borough in the state. And with that increase in population has come a predictable increase in criminal activity. It's just the way the world works at this particular point. Right now, we have a very high use rate for opiates. We have a very high use rate for other controlled substances, and those are typically linked with an increase in property crime. We have these high use rates, these high rates of addiction. It's not uncommon at all to see an increase in property crimes and other types of things like that.
I was coming to the conclusion that maybe this was a drug problem and not a crime problem, and wondered what the chief thought.
Well, I'm not sure that there is a... I'm not sure that there's necessarily a disparity between the two. They're certainly not mutually exclusive. You can, in some cases, they're pretty closely linked. You know, you have a drug problem, and with that is going to come an increase in crime.
Okay. By now, I'm still hanging on to my vision of Mayberry RFD, but I realize crime is a little more complicated than that. So I ask him, surely this must be just the teenagers.
Minor property crime has usually been the purview of the juvenile. A lot of the times, these minor things are committed by kids. When we're talking about cars being broken into, frequently it's teens, sometimes young adults, that kind of stuff. Your average, you know, 40-year-old fellow doesn't go around, you know, checking cars down the street. You know, that's something that a teenager typically does. Same thing with vandalism and you know, criminal mischief, that kind of thing. The opiate problem is something that transcends age groups. It, I mean, you see it anywhere from young adults, late teens, on up to folks that are, you know, well into their senior years. So, yeah, no, I haven't noticed a big change in terms of what ages are being affected by this. Certainly not in the victims, and nor in the perpetrators.
This led me to ask him about the notorious Senate Bill 91. If I couldn't blame one specific person or community problem for my empty console, maybe I could blame Senate Bill 91. SB 91 was passed last April by a wide majority, relying on prison reform research from Pew Charitable Trust Research and Analysis. The bill was designed to help with recidivism and an overcrowded correction system. In short, the bill was to reduce the number of people in jail by 13% in just 7 years and save $380 million overall. And from that savings, $98.8 million was to be reinvested into substance abuse, mental health treatment, reentry support for those leaving prison, violence prevention, and crime victim support. But as far as I could hear, Senate Bill 91 had only released prisoners and stopped police from being able to arrest others.
Has SB 91 affected your practice?
Affected our practice?
Your service yet?
No, I don't. Well, no, I don't think so. It's made changes to the criminal justice landscape, but the way we do our jobs hasn't changed all that much. Now, there's going to be a lot of debate, and there's going to be a lot of ink written, and there's going to be a lot of talk at the legislative level about whether the changes of SB 91 have been positive or negative. What I can say is that since Senate Bill 91 has passed, we have not seen a decrease in much of anything in terms of criminal activity. Now, again, it's a mistake to say that that is a result of Senate Bill 91. I can't say that. What I can say is that it has happened since then, but I can't say that it's attached to it, that it's because of Senate Bill 91. Anecdotally, I think it might be having that effect to at least a degree.
It's the 2016 Uniform Crime Reporting Program's annual report, a condensed little document of only 521 pages, shows a 9% decline in robberies in the state, a 4% decline in assault, and a 16% increase in larceny. And in Palmer, it looks like drug arrests were down by 23 arrests. When I look at the numbers, it's not pretty. Palmer Police Department has 12 officers. Wasilla has 23. Kenai has 16. Soldotna has 13. But even Kodiak has more than Palmer. They have 14. So when you look at that, what can law enforcement expect to do?
Let's talk about drug activity for a second, because
okay,
we were talking about statistics earlier, and if you torture the data long enough, it'll confess, right? And so let's say that right now about stats. You can make them say just about anything, it seems. So statistically, drug crime is down. On the other hand, drug activity is up. And how can that be? Well, when marijuana was decriminalized, and it's now legal to use, a number of citations and arrests went away because this is now legal activity. And so when you look at arrests and charges for drug activity, it's down. But we've seen an increase in use of harder drugs, opiates and methamphetamines in particular. And opiates is heroin, usually, and then prescription pills, and methamphetamine. Cocaine is still here, but not to the level that it seems it used to be. So those have not yet supplanted, to get to the numbers where we used to be when we were making marijuana arrests as well. So, and the reality is we didn't really make all that many marijuana arrests because we had other things that we needed to do. So somebody with, you know, a couple of buds of dope wasn't high on our list of priorities at all, you know. And now it's a legal thing, which is fine. That's the way they chose to go. And our job is to keep people safe within the framework of the law. It's not a problem. But it's an example of how statistics can somehow be, to a degree, misleading.
I'm batting zero. If it's not Senate Bill 91, just what is it? And what can the police do?
Law enforcement is trying to do is partner with some of these other organizations like hospitals, social service organizations, that kind of stuff, in order to do several things. One, we train the officers to better respond to people that are in mental health crisis. And one of those things is called mental health first aid. It's an 8-hour training that all the officers go to. And we try to have what's called a crisis intervention team set up so we can better deal with these things. What we're finding is that frequently the people that we come in contact to regularly could be receiving services from several different other places, but it's kind of spotty at best. There's no one that's really organizing and managing the care for this particular individual. And what we're trying to do is take all these different groups, law enforcement, emergency medical, hospitals, social services, in some cases corrections or whatever, and get them talking so that we can figure out maybe what the best course of action is for this individual so we can treat the problem and not the symptoms. So treating the symptoms might be, you know, this person is committing a minor crime, and so we don't have a whole lot of choice. We can arrest them or we can ignore it. And usually it results in an arrest and they go into Matsu pretrial. Well, that's treated the symptom temporarily, you know, but the problem still remains. This person has a mental health issue that needs to get addressed and is not getting addressed. So how can we get to the root of that problem?
Well, what about a Matsu police force, I wondered. But the chief, although he said that would be great, explained that with 100,000 people now living in the borough, a very large borough, essentially the size of the country of Ireland, well, to create a borough-wide police force would be, in his words, hugely expensive. That's why my run-in with crime boils down to prevention in a lot of ways. I was learning a lot, but I was still unsure of what to do as a homeowner, and I asked the chief just that.
One question that comes up, what does the homeowner do? Is it better to, you know, get a home security system or, you know, do a neighborhood watch?
Well, we strongly encourage neighborhood watch, and we've set up several meetings to try to get some of those groups going. There was a neighborhood watch group for Brittany Estates just a week or so ago, and that was very productive. It was one of the first meetings that they've had as a group, and I think it went really well. We'll be happy to visit with any homeowner who wants us to do an inspection of their house, let them know what security concerns there might be, if maybe they could use some lighting, or maybe they need to trim back some obstructions from around their windows, or maybe we should move that large 50-inch flat screen so it's not visible from the street, or let's make sure you lock your car up, or something along those lines. Or there's an easy port of entrance, you know, that's not easily observed from the back of your home that somebody could easily get in and out of. Oh, and by the way, it's right to your gun safe. It's a straight view. So that's the kind of stuff that we're happy to come and, you know, anytime a homeowner wants us to do that, we'll make an appointment and show up and help them and, you know, let them know what they might be able to do to harden up their site a little bit so it's not so attractive to somebody that might want to get into it.
I had to ask, were you ever broken into?
You ever been broken into?
Personally, yeah. No.
And what would, because you keep your doors locked?
I don't know. It could be because there's a police car parked out front. but yeah, we do try to take security seriously. We lock our doors. But again, the stuff, it's not new in Palmer. That kind of goes back to what we're saying. This isn't a new phenomenon. We've had these types of things where people have gone checking car doors as long as I've worked here. It is not a new thing. Like I said, perhaps it's becoming a little bit more prevalent, but it is not new. So,
this week, the legislature is down in Juneau for another special session. The House is voting on a revision to the revision to the revision of Senate Bill 54, which is in response to Senate Bill 91. What does the chief think about that? He's the one in the trenches.
Repeal and replace, repeal and repair, repeal and start over.
I would say one of the last two, repeal and repair or repeal and start over. Let's not rush this because we do want to make changes. How can we make those changes and in what order should we make those changes in order to, one, keep the population as safe as possible, and two, start fixing the problem so that we are actually taking meaningful steps to address the problem and not treat the symptom.
So our elected officials, have they asked you for your opinion of what's going on?
Some have, yes. Yeah, the elected officials in this area have been receptive. And when they ask, I try to give them straightforward answers. So, and they have asked.
Maybe my little town wasn't Mayberry RFD after all. So what does the chief see for the future in Palmer?
5, 10 years from now, what do you envision for Palmer in terms of crime, safety, and law enforcement?
Well, I would like to keep us to be a relatively safe city the way we have been. There is violence in Palmer of all sorts, and it would be foolish to deny that. But it's not as bad as it is in other locations, and I would like to keep it that way. I would like to see the homeless problem addressed and reduced. I would especially like to see the mental health concerns of the community addressed and hopefully reduced, so some of these folk can get some services. Right now, a big problem is access to services, whether it be for addiction or mental health problems. They're not necessarily always there, even during business hours, to say nothing of 3 o'clock in the morning when my officers are dealing with them. So it would be nice to be able to get these folks that need help right now, or an addict that wants to get clean right now, and that's critical. If they're ready, you've got to get them somewhere, because 24 hours, it's too late. And then I would really like to see Palmer keep a good community-oriented police department where, you know, the officers are in touch with the needs and the wants of the people that they're here to serve, and we have a good relationship. I would rather we did not turn into Baltimore's or Ferguson's or St. Louis, where there is animosity between the police and the people that we are supposed to be here to help, right? This is our job. If we can't help people, we're of no value whatsoever. And so what I want to prevent is that sort of thing. Let's not get too adversarial relationship with our community.
Next door to the Palmer Police is stationed the Palmer branch of the State Troopers. It was there I took my search on crime to Lieutenant Andrew Gorn. The lieutenant started out as an officer in 2006 right here in Palmer. He then went on to the police academy in Sitka as an instructor and eventually found his way back again to the Mat-Su. Lieutenant Gorn is younger than Chief Ketterling and with fewer tattoos. He reminded me of the type of policeman you wanted to be when you grew up, when you were back in grade school. I explained my situation of the car and the garage and the notion that maybe I didn't live in Mayberry RFD after all. I hoped he could dispel that for me. But he echoed much of what Chief Ketterling said. Crime in the Valley? Well, it's complicated.
So how many troopers are assigned to the Valley? Because I've heard it so thin that there's only 4 troopers at a time. How close to truth is that?
It's not too far from the truth. There's currently 32 troopers. That includes the sergeants. There's 3 trooper recruits who are currently in training. And there's also 4 troopers assigned to our criminal suppression unit who works in support of our patrol team. When you factor in days off, the fact that there's shift work, vacation time, family leave, court time, training, it's standard for there to be 5, 6, maybe 7 troopers that are actively working to field calls for service at any given time.
For borough the size of Ireland?
For all of the Mat-Su Valley, it's about 90,000 people that we serve. Troopers do every single day really is amazing. And, to be quite honest, myself, our command staff, and the troopers often get frustrated because we can't provide the level of service that we would like to because we are spread thin. But I assure you, we're doing absolutely the best that we can. With the amount of troopers that we have, the area, the size that we need to serve, and where those people are spread out, we're doing the best we can.
Taking the sheer size of the Valley out of the equation, I wondered if maybe there was something unique about the Valley that impacted the crime rate. The lieutenant returned to a recurring theme, drugs and property crime.
Well, all communities have have challenges. Recently here there's obviously talk of the opioids and substance abuse in general. And, all that ties back into the burglaries and the thefts and the robberies. And everything does tie back in into that. Drugs drive a lot of crime. There's no way to get around that. That's just kind of how it works. If no one had a drug or alcohol problem, I mean, crime would go way down. And that's just the reality in which we live in. So the question becomes is, how do we best address it? Is it through reform? Is it through additional services? Is it through the community taking a big step forward and coming together and letting their sentiments known to the legislature? I don't have a perfect answer, but yeah, we absolutely have our challenges, just like any community does.
In the Massive Crime Rate in Alaska document, there shows a general downward trend in all crime until 2016, when incidence of crime raises sharply. Before or after the April passage of Senate Bill 91 is impossible to tell. While violent crime and assault shows alarming increases, the increase in larceny and theft grew from 15,156 thefts statewide to 17,683, almost 18,000, between 2015 and 2016. And vehicle theft, half again as much, from 2,040 thefts to 3,049. Did Lieutenant Gorn see the same trend in the Valley?
We do have an increase in crime, specifically around thefts and burglaries. We absolutely do. We go back to 2014 because there was an increase in the burglaries and the thefts. We started the Criminal Suppression Unit. That's our three troopers and a sergeant, and that was to in response to try to hold some of these people accountable. And, you know, today, now that's 2014, 15, 16, mm-hmm. and they're in their fourth year now here in 2017, and last year they recovered nearly $600,000 in property. You know, in a response to that uptick, that was our answer, and they're doing great work with what they have. You know, I wish we could give them more bodies. You know, what could we do with eight troopers in the criminal suppression unit? I don't know, but we don't have the positions to do that. So I would agree that, you know, we're seeing some of those same issues here. And what does it all come back to? That's the big question. You know, is it the drugs? Is it just that they didn't have, guidance growing up? You know, it's going to be a combination of all that. Is that they don't have access to the services that they need in regards to getting help for their substance abuse? Are there mental health problems and they don't have access to help along those lines? So all that does come back in, and it impacts the amount of crime.
Slowly, I was beginning to grasp the complicated nature of increased crime in my pretty valley. But perhaps the lieutenant could assure me that it was a demographic of young perpetrators. If so, I could convince myself we could simply just grow up out of this trend.
That's what I'm finding when I'm talking to people. It's not simply a crime issue. It's a layered. When you look at crime, like you say, well, drugs push crime. Mental illness can push crime. Increased population can increase crime. So you just can't pinpoint to one thing. It's a complicated world. Is it youth? Is it a younger? Is there any sort of demographic there?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't have the answer off the top of my head. I don't think so. I think that those types of problems affect all age groups. Drug problems specifically, you know, opioids seem to affect all socioeconomic classes. It's not biased in any way. And, you know, don't get me wrong, at some point somebody chose to take that drug, to put the needle in their arm. It was their decision, but what drove that decision? It touches all ages, all races. So I don't think that you can specifically tie it to teenagers or to people in their 20s or people in their 30s. I think it's wide-ranging.
I couldn't help myself. I knew it was asking the lieutenant for a political opinion, but what about Senate Bill 91?
Senate Bill 91. The sponsors had good intentions of helping the addicted, the mentally ill, recidivism, and overcrowded jails. But if you could propose a bill with law enforcement and reduction in crime in mind, what would your bill include?
Sure. I don't think there's a perfect way to address crime. We've been trying to do it for a very long time.
Well, you know what? I think they were trying to do that when I was a kid.
You know, we've had law enforcement, the court system, the criminal laws, Department of Corrections. All those pieces have been in place in our society for a very long time, and here we are how many years later having this conversation. So I don't think there's a perfect answer to it. Maybe the question is, what can we do a little bit differently, or how can we approach it differently? But your question was specific to what would I like to see in a bill. First and foremost, I think if we don't hold people accountable, if we don't give a reason for them to change behavior, why would they? It's kind of like raising a child. If your child acts out, are you going to give some type of corrective behavior, bring some type of reason for them not to do that again? If we don't do that, I think we're chasing a failed technique. So that's the first thing. I think we need to hold people accountable for their actions. Along with that, I would like to see relief and closure to the victims. I think that's extremely important, and I don't think that they always get that with the way our current system is set up. You know, we have a court system that has understaffing issues just like everybody else. Our court system can't even take in all of the criminal cases. They're declining things that are absolutely good cases or could be good cases, but they don't have staff to deal with it. I don't think that that's fair to victims, but that's where we're at. And lastly, I would like to see a bill have some type of incentive or some type of way to get people help that they need, but people can't get help unless they're held accountable. If we just keep letting people commit the same crime or keep walking out the door, how do we get them the help that they need? Will they ever get it? So that's what I would like to see in a bill. Hold people accountable, provide some relief and closure to the victims, and try to find a way to bring people the real help that they need, get to the root of the problem.
Ultimately, the lieutenant was focused on improving the quality of life in the Valley, and that wasn't as simple as passing one piece of legislation.
And it's a combined effort. Law enforcement doesn't have the answer. I don't think the legislature has a specific answer. It's going to take a collaborative effort between law enforcement, the courts, corrections, our legislature with our laws, and the community. The community absolutely has to have buy-in. The public sentiment needs to be known to the legislatures and, to the department heads of what they're looking for.
Both Chief Ketterling and Lieutenant Thorne mentioned the importance of community over and over again. But what does that mean? I asked the lieutenant.
When you say community, for me, community is I go to the events at the depot and Friday Fling, and I try to, be involved in community events. Does that help in crime?
I think it can. If we're bringing our children and exposing them to the great events that are out there within the Mattsu Valley, exposing people to the positive things in life, I think that absolutely has to have an impact further down the line.
Where you know each other, you see each other there in public.
It's okay to know your neighbor. Yeah. It's okay to talk to your neighbors. It's okay to go to community events. It's okay to smile at people and say hi. Just bringing the community together in a positive way. There's entities out there in our community that are doing really good things.
Yes, there are.
There's the My House. There's the Mattsu Health Foundation, reinvesting in our communities.
Mattsu Trails Foundation. There's all sorts of good things going on
Absolutely.
In our community.
So, we have a resilient community. I think our community wants to do better. I think we can do better, and I think we're going to do better.
If you had a crystal ball, what does our valley look like in 5 and 10 years in regards to crime?
I think that we have a very resilient community. We're growing. In 2008, we were 70. The people that we served was 70,000. Now AST in Mattsu Valley serving 90,000. That's over 25% increase in the people that we're serving. The community is going to continue to grow. People aren't going to start closing up shop and just heading out. It's going to continue to grow, and it's growing for good reason because it's a great community. In 5 years, I think we're going to start to get some infrastructure in place. We have entities like the Mattsu Regional Medical Center. They're doing whatever they can to get,
They're requesting, 32 more beds?
Yeah, so they see the need and they want to help. They're trying to get those mental health beds to give better care to the people here in the Mattsu Valley. We mentioned My House, Mattsu Health Foundation. We have a crisis intervention team here now, and police officers are receiving training to help better deal with people going through crisis. We're doing things and we're trying to get these pieces in place, and I think over the next 5 years, we're going to continue to get those pieces in place. And looking beyond that 5 years, looking further down the road, I think we're going to start making headway because everybody is coming together. I think we're going to make headway into the substance abuse issues that some have, and I think we're going to have better care for people that have, you know, mental health issues and currently can't get the help they need here in the Mat-Su Valley. I think looking further down the line, that we're going to start to see a reduction in crime. That's my hope.
I appreciate the hopefulness for the Mat-Su. I actually share that vision. But about my car, should I get a mean dog, organize a neighborhood watch, electronic surveillance, I can check on my phone? Is it time to get a gun? Or should I just lock my doors?
Well, if we're specifically talking about, you know, trying to...
Just neighborhood.
Being a victim of theft and things like that. Yeah, one's just be vigilant, you know. Do you see a vehicle that just doesn't seem like it belongs there? If so, call us up. Maybe we have a unit that's in the area that can swing by and see why, you know, there appears to be anyways, you know, wrong person, wrong place, wrong time. I'm doing simple things like that. Try to get a license plate, vehicle description. Lock your vehicle doors. if you don't park in your garage, or even if you do, you know, lock your doors. You
know,
don't keep valuables inside your car. Don't keep firearms inside your car, unlocked. You know, do the little things. Lock your doors to your garage. Lock your door to your house. We need to be realistic and do the things like that. The last is, you know, what kind of property do you own? We all have digital cameras. Most everybody has a cell phone. Or if they don't have a digital camera, their neighbor does, or their son does, or mm-hmm. a family member yeah. does. We can easily document our property now. So if you have valuable jewelry, well, take a picture of it. Send it to yourself in an email. So you can easily reference it in the, you know, unlikely event that it would be stolen. Mm-hmm. So you can provide that photo documentation to the law enforcement officers. We should write down our serial numbers, make and model of our valuables, and even take a picture of the serial number. Again, there's no reason that we can't easily document that. So we should be doing small things like that. The wireless camera systems now, they're really quite cost effective now. You know, it's not like it used to be in the past. They've come down and they're, in my eyes, you know, they're reasonably affordable, and the ease of installation is there. You don't need to have a professional.
Do they prevent crime? Do criminals see that little sign and say, I'm not going there?
No. Is it going to prevent crime? Probably not. I'm mm-hmm. going to be honest with you. It might not prevent it, but it sure could go a long way in helping getting your stuff back and putting that person or holding that person accountable who committed that crime, so it doesn't happen to the person in the next neighborhood yeah. over the next night.
Okay.
Because if they did it once, they're probably going to do it twice. If they did it twice, okay. they're probably going to do it three times. And that's where our criminal suppression unit's really been great, is finding those habitual offenders.
And neighborhood watch? How does that compare to the surveillance?
Sure. Neighborhood watch can be a great tool if it's used. You know, oftentimes they get stood up and they mm-hmm. kind of fall down. And that's a lot about just talking to your neighbors, being mm-hmm. neighborly, communicating.
Yeah, that's my Mayberry RFD. We can do it. But in reality, at the end of the day, how should people think about our valley, I asked?
I'd like everyone to understand, you know, the Mat-Su Valley does have challenges like any community, but it's a great community. I live here for a reason. I'm going to stay here for a reason. I'm staying here to raise my family because I think it is a great community. There's a lot of good things happening. Oftentimes, the only thing that makes the news or the only thing that's broadcast to the masses are law enforcement events that are often, you know,
yep.
you know, not showing the greatest aspects of where we live, you know, the crime and, you know, motor vehicle collisions, things like that. But there's a lot of good stuff happening. I'd also like people to know that, you know, despite the resources that we have, the limited amount of troopers that we have, we really are doing the best we can. We have a tremendous civilian staff that's also going through the same thing that the commissioned troopers are going through. They're working just as hard as we are to try to make this all work and to try to provide, you know, the services and the answers that people are looking for when they call the state troopers up. Also, since we are, you know, short-staffed, we are looking for all the good troopers we can get. We absolutely are. We are in a hiring push. If anyone is interested in becoming an Alaska State Trooper, or they know somebody who is, or think somebody would be a great fit, go to alaskastatetrooper.com. You'll find all sorts of great information there. They can call our recruitment folks down in Anchorage at our headquarters, 877-AK-TROOP, or just simply go to the official State Troopers Facebook page, go through that recruitment process.
After talking to the Palmer Police Chief and Trooper Gorn, I felt hopeful. Not that crime would suddenly disappear, but that I lived in a great place and a community that worked together to make it better. But now it was time I went after the Wasilla side of crime. My first stop was at the October 19th Public Safety Listening Session hosted by the Mat-Su Republican delegation at Thielen Middle School. It was eye-opening, to say the least. I went to the meeting with the image of a controlled speaking time and a sign-up sheet for public testimony, the ones I was used to, with a 3-minute bell and then an ejection seat. Instead, I found a casual listening session, just like the title suggested. It was an open mic affair, and citizens took the mic and stood in front of the 40 or so people and vented, really. Senator Mike Dunleavy facilitated and encouraged the speakers to stay on the topic of whether or not they felt Senate Bill 91 should be repealed or repaired. It was a long night, and the stories made my little open garage seem just that. Very little. Chief Ketterlein was there, and he spoke, and a police officer from Bethel spoke, with anecdotal stories of the abuses and disadvantages law enforcement has found working under Senate Bill 91. Mothers told sad, sad stories of drug-addicted children and how they wanted stiffer jail time just to keep their son or daughter off the street and clean. Mayor Cottle was there, and he spoke, too, about increased crime and the need to address it. And on his way out the door, I caught up with him, and I asked him what his hopes and fears were about the increase of crime in Wasilla, and what did he think about Senate Bill 91.
But as mayor of the city of Wasilla, what are your fears and your hopes regarding crime?
The fear is that we can't protect our citizens that they expect a certain level of law enforcement, and they expect to be safe when they get out of the car, when they go shopping. Shopping is our mainstay for inside the city. And if you don't feel safe going shopping inside the city, you're not going to shop in the city. And that's our tax base. So you have to feel safe inside our jurisdiction. And we're going to do everything we can to make sure you're safe. And if it means, increasing law enforcement, we're going to increase law enforcement. And we're starting to see more and more businesses move closer to the city because we do have the protection. I mean, I have the fourth largest police department in the state at 26, and that number may go up a couple, but it's our job to make sure people are safe inside the city. And we worked hard to get that tax increase.
Yes.
I mean, to build a new police department, and we've already bought the land, so we're going to build, we'll start construction in 19, it'll be open in 20, but we're going to have a brand new police department. My guys still respond to shoplifting. And store owners appreciate that. I mean, we might only give them a ticket or whatever is, allowed by the law, but my guys are still coming.
Mayor Cottle is intense. He's intense about his town, and he's intense about crime. So I asked him if he thought what we had was a crime problem, an economic problem, or a drug problem.
It's all of it. I think drugs play a part in it. We just did a case here a few months ago. We had to go rent a 40-foot Connex to haul all the stolen stuff out of the house that we busted. 40-foot Connex. These guys had snow machines and four-wheelers and outboard engines. We don't have that much storage. We had to go get a 40-foot Connex. So, I mean, and they're doing it for drugs. They're doing it for drugs. So I think it's a combination of stuff.
Mayor Cottle didn't say he thought crime itself was any different than before, but he did say that he thought the tolerance for petty crime and behavior had increased, which made the crimes arrested for just that much worse. He was formerly the police chief of Valdez. He's seen crime in a small town where there was nowhere else to go, all the way to Wasilla, which is now bursting at the seams at the corner of Kinnick and Main.
33,000 cars a day going by Wasilla Lake. I got 19,000 cars a day on KGB. And if you put a pencil in the Main Street and Parks Highway, there's 60,000 cars a day go through that 1 mile grid. Now, some of them are repeat, but there's 60,000 cars going through that grid. So, yeah.
That is a lot of people. When I look at the data from the incident activity by beat spreadsheet available at the meeting, I could see the impact. Wasilla had almost twice as many incidents than Palmer in larceny, drug arrests, vandalism, assaults, you name it. By the time I got back to the meeting, it was ending, and the senator was addressing the group with final words.
Priorities into these areas, and we'll deal with the tax issue later, but right now, we've got a problem with public safety.
I caught the senator as everyone was clearing out. He was heading up to Glen Allen the next day for another listening session on SB 91 and crime. I knew what I'd learned about crime in the Valley during the last few weeks. Now I wondered what he had learned.
That a lot more Alaskans have been touched by crime than I previously thought. As you just mentioned, you have folks in this audience right now who have family members murdered, family members sexually assaulted, family members robbed, family members breaking an entry. It's much more pervasive than I thought. And what you're seeing reported, which is extremely high, is only the tip of the iceberg. So it's a lot worse than we think, number one. Number two, there are ways to get out of this, and there are ways to make Alaska safer. There really are. But we have to make it a priority, and we have not done that for quite some time. Those two things.
Now, the senator and I know each other from several public meetings over the years. I have rarely agreed with him on issues, particularly on issues on public education. We're good-natured about it, but it's expected we're not going to agree. But this time, I had to admit, I agreed with him. This is what I learned, too.
You know, that's what I have found out in all of my doings.
See, we think alike.
We do.
There is an increase in crime. Senate Bill 91 has not helped the situation as it defended much of its corrections, but did not fund the alternatives. And the Valley is still a great place to live, but it's going to take a resilient and strong community to keep it that way. And it's very doable. But the opioid epidemic, the state economic crisis, the boom in population has to be addressed. The legislature is in session again, and the House has passed House Bill 54, a 46-page document designed to address the issues of Senate Bill 91, returning stiffer penalties for lesser crimes. It heads to the Senate. We'll see what happens. In the meantime, I'm not going to panic. This is a wonderful place to live, even if it isn't the Mayberry RFD I thought it was. I'm going to pay more attention to my surroundings, get to know my neighbors better, and be active in my community events. And on the flip side, I'm making a list of my belongings and their serial numbers. I'm buying blinds for my big picture windows. And yes, I'm locking my doors.
This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.